Moshe Amsel, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, thank you so much for having me on your show again. I know that people are probably getting tired of hearing my voice, but I'm super excited about the upcoming event and the opportunity you're giving me to share some little snippets of information with your audience on what we're covering on February 9th to 11th at the Law Firm Growth Summit.
Well, listen, I get the opportunity to do this for a lot of people. I've never done it before. And so that should say something about the confidence that I have in the quality of the Law Firm Growth Summit, because I'm happy to do this and it pleases me. You know, I'm lucky enough to be one of your presenters, and that's great, but I would do so even if I wasn't. So what we're talking about, folks, is the Law Firm Growth Summit. We've talked about it for the last couple of weeks, and this is our last opportunity to share some information with you. Moshe, tell our audience about the Law Firm Growth Summit and what we can look forward to, and particularly in the terms of financial issues with respect to how the market has changed, how the business has changed.
Absolutely. So the first thing I'm going to share is that one of the things that we wanted to overcome with this event was the ability for you to leave having something actionable that you've already done, that you don't have a list of things that you need to change or do that's 20 pages long and then never get to them. So we have created a structure where we are going to have workshops in each of these main areas that we're discussing, where you can choose the area within that area that you need to work on the most, join that workshop, and literally leave with something completed that you've been coached through, you've been talked through, you've been shown how to do, and you have the finished, completed item with you. So I'm super excited about that. We have a ton of hands-on workshops that you're going to be able to do. You definitely want to check out the agenda at lawfirmgrowthsummit.com/TLE. Now, regards to financials, I think that the underlying shift in the industry that's happening is the consumer is becoming smarter about what they need in their relationship with the attorney. It no longer is, hey, I need an attorney to represent me, so let me find an attorney and I'm just going to pay them by the hour for the thing that I need. Consumers want to know, what is the total cost to me? They want to know, what is my risk? What is my reward? Is this going to be money that's well spent? Is there an alternative way to do this? And that level of questioning that's coming from the consumer is only increasing by the day. And we want to make sure that we help you navigate that and help you figure out the right business model long-term. I honestly think, and I know that there are people out there that definitely disagree with me, but I honestly think that for a lot of the transactional law, you know, bankruptcy, estate planning, family law, the non-litigation part of it at least, a lot of those areas of law are going to be moving away from this hourly billing model. And you're left trying to navigate and figure out, what is the right model for me? Is it subscriptions? Is it flat fee? Is it some other measure of value? And how do I position this in a way that makes the most sense for my potential client so that they want to work with me because I have the right solution for them, not because I'm just another person who they're surveying and seeing what's my hourly rate. The other interesting thing that we're seeing in the industry, and this was highlighted in the 2020 Legal Trends Report published by Clio, is that consumers are looking for different ways to pay for these legal services. So they're looking for payment plans, they're looking for discounts, they're looking for things like that. And you need to be able to provide that upfront. When we discount the billing on the back end, when we cut the price of something and say, oh, I'm not going to bill this many hours because it's unreasonable that it took us that long, even though it took us that long, you're essentially saying, I would have charged less, but had I presented that at the beginning in the sales conversation, I might have got more clients. So how do we position our business model in a way that we're not discounting on the back end, but instead we're providing the true price that they're going to pay on the front end so that we could get more clients instead of losing them in the sales process up front? So these are the kinds of conversations and the kinds of topics we're going to be navigating in the business and finance section of the Law Firm Growth Summit in February.
Yeah, and I know that at least one of your keynote speakers has a noted author in that arena with his book, right?
Absolutely. Mike Michalowicz, the author of Profit First, is going to be keynoting and definitely going to be talking about Profit First, about your cash management and how you can become a better steward to cash. You know what I love about him and his entity? They have this tagline, eradicating entrepreneurial poverty. And as soon as you hear that, probably 80% or more of your listeners are nodding their heads and saying, yep. I feel like I have entrepreneurial poverty.
I know exactly what that is. I don't need it defined for me. I have a guttural response to that phrase.
Yep. So I love that. And I'm excited to bring him.
Wonderful. Well, Moshe, thanks for joining us for a few minutes here today prior to our show. I'm happy to hear about the upcoming Growth Summit. And just one last plug. How do our listeners go about getting some more information?
Absolutely. Go to lawfirmgrowthsummit.com/TLE. That's for the Law Entrepreneur, by the way, the best podcast in town. And I'm right behind it with Profit with Law, but it definitely Neil's show takes the cake. And you want to go to lawfirmgrowthsummit.com/TLE, check out all the information, and you don't want to miss this. You don't want the FOMO. You don't want to wonder, should I have gone? Just join us for 3 days, February 9th to 11th.
And I will tell you that Profit with Law is on my weekly rotational podcast. So I'm a big fan as well. So Moshe, thanks ever so much for being a guest today with us on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. Take care.
Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 252 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. I am super stoked to have this next guest on my program, Chester Santos. Chester Santos, often referred to as the International Man of Memory, is one of the world's foremost experts on memory training. He was the 2008 U.S. National Memory Champion. And I have been fascinated with memory and techniques to improve one's memory ever since I read a book called Moonwalking with Einstein by Joshua Foer, F-O-E-R. A fascinating book. Joshua was a journalist who started investigating and writing about the U.S. Memory Championship, and in doing the research for his book, became enamored in the process and went on himself to become the U.S. Memory Champion. And Chester Santos is part of that book that Joshua wrote, Moonwalking with Einstein. So I thought this would be a great episode to have on for us attorneys because, let's face it, memory is an important skill set for attorneys and starts all the way back in law school and extends all the way to closing arguments, so to speak. So I thought we'd have Chester on and talk about ways to improve our memory and what you can do to stave off the decline in memory ability. So without any further delay, here is Chester Santos. Chester Santos, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil. I'm very much looking forward to talking with you today.
Well, I'm really, really, really excited to have you on the program. Chester, a slight departure from the typical type of guest that we would normally have on the program, but I think our audience is going to understand exactly why I'm so thrilled to have you on. So by way of introduction, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, my name is Chester Santos, also known as the International Man of Memory. So I won the United States National Memory Championship. And since winning that competition, I've gone on to spend the last 12 plus years training people around the world in how they can develop powerful memory skills and use those skills to become more successful in their career, personal life, and also help their kids out in school. I've given presentations now in more than 30 different countries for various types of organizations. I'm very confident that everyone out there has the ability to develop powerful memory skills. And really one profession, I think, in particular that can benefit from this is definitely the legal field, legal profession.
Well, absolutely. There is demand on, you know, having a good memory and it in the legal field. It starts with law school. I mean, in law school, for better or for worse, there's so much memorization that goes into preparing for the bar exam. Now, much of that you completely forget after the bar exam because, you know, is it a practice area or has nothing to do with what you're actually doing as a practicing attorney. But that requirement exists in law school. And then when you start your career, there's all kinds of new things to remember. And I know lawyers that just have a real challenge when a daunting challenge when it comes to trying to remember, you know, case names or citations or trains of thought in their opening or closing arguments or just anything. And that's why I think it's going to be really exciting for us to hear your views on memory and memory training.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing with you some, basically I have some tips that people can put to use right away that I think will provide a noticeable improvement in many different areas.
Well, let me ask you this before we get into that. You know, is there such a thing as some people have a gift for good memory and some people just can't remember, you know, what they did this morning?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, we all have a natural inclination toward certain areas. So some people are just born with, they tend to be better in music, right? There are some right. people that are good at sports, right? They're better athletically. I just happen to be probably above average in terms of memory to begin with. So that's what kind of sparked my interest when I saw a segment on the United States Memory Championship on ABC's 2020. I started off above average, but I was really able to magnify my memory from where it was by learning the right techniques, putting it in a little bit of training and practice. I eventually reached the point to where I could memorize hundreds of names and of people in just minutes, decks of playing cards, hundreds of digits and things like that. Really, no matter where you might be today in terms of your memory ability, you can dramatically improve it from where it is right now with just the right learning the right techniques, a little bit of training and practice. So if you aren't born with that natural ability in terms of memory, don't worry about it. It can be improved.
It's kind of like when in a previous lifetime, I used to teach the martial arts, and I had this observation about flexibility training that some people are born naturally flexible, some people are born and are unflexible, and then there are those in the middle who can rapidly improve with training. And so, what I'm hearing you say that that's very much similar in terms of memory. That if you're not real good, you can't improve.
Exactly. So we're all going to be different in terms of our starting point, but no matter what your starting point might be, you can dramatically improve from there with the right training and a little bit of, you know, fun. The practice can actually be fun. I hope people will realize that during the course of what we go over today.
Can memory efficiency, I'm not sure if that's the right term, but can your memory be better in situational context? What I'm trying to suggest is, you know, there are things, for instance, when I had students who came into the martial arts studio, I would remember their name. They would walk in, they introduce themselves. I'd remember their name forever. yet I'd have relatives introduced to me and I couldn't remember their names, you know, 5 minutes later. I just was attuned to remembering students' names and not attuned to casually remembering relatives and friends' names, as an example.
Yeah, so you really, I think, actually, the way you described it, it seems like you understand exactly what was going on there. You were just more attuned, right, in the situation of the students. And what I provide people with is a framework to use, and you're basically going to get into the habit of going through a series of steps whenever you're meeting someone. And once these steps become a habit to you, you're going to be better at remembering names really in any situation.
Well, let's then talk about some of the ways that one can go about trying to improve their memory, and what some of these steps are in particular, and just in general, what are the things that we should be trying to do to get a more efficient memory?
Yeah, so no matter what specific memory technique, there are many different memory techniques that you can learn, but no matter the specific technique and no matter the information type that you're trying to remember, whether it's names, languages, presentations, and so on, there are always going to be merely three main principles, just three that you really need to master. Number one is visualization. So turn whatever the information is that you'd like to remember, try to turn that into something that you can picture clearly in your mind, something that you can see. So in the case of names, if I were to meet someone named Mike, I might visualize a microphone. If I were meeting someone named Alice, I might visualize a white rabbit because that reminds me of Alice in Wonderland. Sure. So turning the name into a visual is going to be very useful. That's how I will, believe it or not, open presentations around the world with naming hundreds of people in the audience after just meeting everybody right before it starts. It's turning the names into visuals. An example I think that people can relate to, let's say you go to a party, all right? You go to a party, you're meeting a lot of new people there. 2 weeks after that party is over, you're talking with a friend that was there also, and your friend describes someone to you from the party. Your friend says, "Hey, Neil, do you remember that other attorney that we met at the party? He's also a member of the tennis club." As your friend is going through that description of the person from the party, you can picture who they're describing a lot of times, right? Obviously, your friend can picture who they're describing to you, but neither one of you can manage to remember the person's name, and it's really frustrating to both of you, right? So that example there illustrates that we tend to be pretty good at remembering people's faces, right? What they look like, but we're not nearly as good at remembering the names. This makes sense because when we are interacting with people in various ways, we see the face is recorded into our visual memory, but we don't see the name. The name is something much more abstract to our brain. So what we want to do, as I mentioned, is turn the names into visuals. So again, a microphone, for instance, for the name Mike. That's going to be very helpful. So that's the first thing is visuals is very useful.
And would you be trying to develop kind of a compound image, you know, to use your example, you know, Mike, you picture a microphone in your brain, and then let's just say his last name is Adams, and you think of somebody's Adam's apple bouncing on the microphone. Is that the kind of compound image that you're trying to establish quickly in your head?
So I would keep two things in mind. One, a simple image or series of images that will only remind you of the name, just the name itself to begin with. Once you have that simple image, I would then connect that to something unique about the person's look. So what you want to do is ask yourself, okay, how does this person I'm meeting, how do they look unique to me in some way? Maybe you notice this particular Mike's hair. So what you would do is imagine that the microphone is getting tangled up in his hair. So the next time you're running into someone that you previously met, all you have to do is ask yourself, okay, what's noticeable to me about this person's look? What you personally noticed before is very likely what you personally would notice again, right? So you'll notice the hair again. The image of the microphone that you put there would tell you right away that the person's name is Mike. It sounds maybe a little bit silly, but anyone can get really good at doing it with just a little bit of training and practice.
Is there some underlying science behind this concept where you add a visual to a name, for instance, or to the fact that you're trying to remember? Does it stimulate more brain cells or stimulate them in a different way? Or is that something you can comment on?
Yeah, you are actually activating much more of the brain. And after you come up, you're activating much more of the brain. And after you come up with the visual, it's even more powerful and effective to try and add more and more senses as you can and as you can from there. So that's actually the second principle is after coming up with the visual, principle number two, the more senses you involve in the encoding process, the more of your brain is activated and the more connections in your mind that you're building to the information. So it makes it easier to retrieve it later. So I starred in an episode of PBS's Nova Science. The episode that I starred in was titled, How Smart Can We Get? Or maybe just Google Chester Santos, that's me in PBS, and people will find the clip online. You can watch it for free. I performed some crazy memory feats on the show, and they had me train David Pogue. People might know him. He's a correspondent for the tech industry for the New York Times and CBS News. I trained him, and he was able to then perform some pretty cool memory feats after just a little bit of training. Next on the show, they had some brain scientists, neuroscientists, come on and explain for people watching at home, okay, how in the world did Chester do that? And how did David Pogue pull off those memory feats with just a little bit of training? And these brain scientists confirmed that it's because with these memory techniques that I've mastered over the years and that we'll teach people a little bit about during the interview today, what's happening is we're recruiting extra areas of the brain. We're activating more of the brain to help us so it becomes easier to remember just about anything later on. And part of that is learning to come up with visuals and activate more and more senses as you can.
Well, that's fascinating. I'm thinking about some of the things that attorneys have to remember, and certainly names, and certainly one of them. I know for me, my biggest problem that this actual technique would help solve is frequently I say my name, they say theirs, and I'm not really listening. You know, I'm shaking their hand when we used to shake hands, or trying to think ahead about, you know, how the conversation can move forward. And I actually I know of myself, I frequently never even really heard what their name was. And so just the discipline of doing this would force you to overcome that liability.
Yeah, so that is what you described there is very common. And, you know, I'll give you some steps that anyone can put into practice right away that are independent of really mastering these visual type memory techniques, but they go well together with the visuals. Before I do that, I just want to stress how important names really are. You know, I like to quote the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Yeah. People might have heard of that. It's one of the most popular business and personal success related books written. In that book, it was written that the sweetest sound to a person in any language is the sound of their own name, and also that everyone's favorite subject is themselves. So definitely remembering people's names, things about them, it helps you to build better business, personal relationships. You're not getting the most out of business networking if the next time you see someone, you can't remember what their name is or what they do for a living.
Right.
And this can, you know, when you get names wrong, it can be very detrimental to business relationships. There's an Inc.com article people can look up later if they'd like about Steph Curry from the Warriors, the basketball team. Nike lost him as a client for sponsorship because at multiple meetings with Nike executives, they kept calling him by the wrong name. And, you know, he was, his father's quoted in the article saying, we let it slide a couple of times, but the fact that these executives couldn't make the adjustment, they really weren't happy about it. He signed on with Under Armour instead. And the article says that this could mean billions of dollars in market cap difference for Under Armour if he continues to be a popular player. So sometimes billions of dollars are at stake. But I think just attorneys, any business professional, we realize that our VIP clients, we've got to, you know, pronounce their name correctly. We've got to remember things that they like, things that they don't like, and definitely, but names at a minimum. So with that being said, four steps that anybody can put into practice. Number one, whenever you're introduced to someone, make it a point to immediately repeat their name. It sounds so, so obvious. But if you're introduced to someone named John, just get into the habit of saying, "Nice to meet you, John. Pleased to meet you, John." Shake their hand if you can, or maybe with the pandemic going on, just give them an elbow bump. But get into the habit of repeating the name, because that forces you to pay attention for at least 1 second, right? That's the only way you could repeat the name back. So you've got to pay attention for 1 second. Then step number two, ask them a question early on using their name. So Neil, how do you know Chester? Or Neil, how long have you been involved with the organization? Step number three, think of a connection between the name and anything at all that you already know. So if I'm meeting someone named Neil, maybe I think of Neil Diamond. If I'm meeting someone named John, maybe I think of John Lennon, right? So you want to think of a connection between that particular person's name and anything that you already know. It could be a famous person like that. And step four, whenever you leave the meeting, whatever type of function it might be, just make it a point to say goodbye using the name. I hope to see you again sometime, Neil, or I hope to see you again sometime, John. Just use the name one last time. That's going to go a long way towards helping you to remember more of those names the next time you see people. If you combine those four simple steps with the visuals that we went over earlier, you will notice really a dramatic improvement in your ability to remember people's names.
Well, that's terrific. You know, it's something I do when I get like a tech support or a help desk person on the phone. I'll do that. I don't know why I got in the habit. Just seems like you get better service that way. And now I'm asking myself, well, if I do that with a complete stranger, why aren't I doing that with the people I meet in real life? So it's great advice.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're going to notice that it is easy to do this. You just need to get started, right? And once you start putting this into practice, eventually it's going to become a habit. And there are a lot of benefits. This increases popularity, likability. Your likability factor affects your success in business, right? It isn't always the most, qualified person, unfortunately, that gets the job. It isn't always the most qualified person that necessarily gets the raise or the promotion. Performance, of course, is a big factor, but likability is also factored in there. And you
know, we have a common phrase that we use in law, in the business of law, is that clients hire attorneys that they know, like, and trust.
There you go. Perfect. I love it. Yeah. So that's very, very true. And remembering names and things about people is definitely a part of that. One profession that's really clear on the power in that is politicians, actually. So I've had some politicians as private coaching clients over the year. If people check out my Instagram later, they'll be able to see some of the famous people that I've been able to work with over the years. But they're really clear on how this helps to make you more popular and more likable, remembering names and things about people.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and it's changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity with quality, evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment.
Now, If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients. You know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. So we talked about a couple of general principles, visualizations and getting your senses involved. What's another one?
Yeah, so the third and final principle is while you are seeing and experiencing all of this happening in your mind, make it crazy, unusual, extraordinary in some way so that you can take advantage of the psychological aspect to human memory. And that is all of us, with putting forth little to no effort, we tend to remember things that catch us by surprise that are extraordinary in some way, right? So, Neil, if whatever room you're in right now, and for your listeners, whatever room they're in, if an elephant suddenly crashed into the room at this moment and started to spray water all over you with its trunk, if that actually happened right now, you would probably remember that for the rest of your life. Sure. And always tell that story, even 40 years from now. You will never believe this. I had this memory skills expert on my show, and while we were doing that interview, an elephant crashed into the room, right? You would remember that maybe for the rest of your life without even trying to commit that to memory. So this is something that isn't fully understood even to this day, how exactly that works in the brain, how sometimes in one instance, something will go straight into long-term memory, stay there forever, whereas other times we have, you know, we spend months, weeks, months, years trying to get certain things into long-term memory and we can't do it. Although it isn't fully understood, we just need to realize that there is that psychological aspect to human memory. And then once we realize it, we can take advantage of that, harness it, and apply it to things that would be very useful. So presentations, opening and closing arguments, exam, training material, right? There are so many languages. There are just so many practical applications for an improved ability to remember because memory is really a fundamental part of learning. So that's the third principle. Visualization was one. Second was try to get more senses involved from there. And third is make it all strange, unusual, extraordinary in some way.
Well, it's kind of an interesting concept in how you kind of put those three things together. I'm trying to visualize or imagine in my mind, you know, how that would work. So we're going to have to try that in a little bit. Before we get to that, are there things that are detrimental to developing your memory skills?
Definitely. So again, with the right approach, the right technique, training and practice, anyone can dramatically improve their ability to remember just about anything at all. There are three big memory killers. I'll go over the top three memory killers. One is lack of sleep.
Guilty.
A on a regular basis. So in other words, you know, if there are a couple of nights where you don't get enough sleep, and then, you know, on the third night, you get back into a better routine, you'll be fine. But over time, it starts to have a longer lasting impact on your memory. So lack of sleep is one. Number two, excess stress in your life. So if you're stressed out all the time, it's really going to start to have a negative impact on your ability to recall important information at key moments. And third in the top three is excess alcohol on a regular basis. So, you know, during the holidays, if you are attending a bunch of parties, maybe drinking a little bit more than usual, your brain definitely can recover from that. But what happens is over time, it starts to take longer and longer for your brain to fully recover. So excess alcohol on a regular basis is going to start to have a long-term negative impact on your memory. So those are the top three things that can really hurt your memory over time and kind of negate a bit the benefits of the training and practice.
I couldn't help but think that you were describing just about every attorney I know, somebody who doesn't get enough sleep, is stressed out all the time, and drinks too much is just about the description of the legal field in some ways. I'm curious though, and I say that in jest, I'm curious though that you did not include age as one of the things that impacts our ability to remember things and to develop a strong memory background. Is that intentional?
Well, you know, some people, I can go as far as to say a lot of people out there think that someone older in age is going to have a memory worse than someone younger in age, but that is not necessarily the case. Yes, there are biological changes that do take place in the brain as we are getting older, but really, you can have a strong brain, a powerful memory at any age, but it is more about who is engaging in mental exercise, who is working on their memory. So I've actually been teaching a one-day workshop in San Francisco for over 12 years now. People from all over the United States have attended it, and all age ranges have been in there. It's now, the equivalent is now online, of course, online memory school, since during the pandemic, people can't attend in person. But I've had all age ranges. I had a woman 1 year in the workshop, 85 years old, 85. She was razor sharp, didn't make one mistake the entire day. Everybody was totally amazed with her. And, you know, talking with her, and we're Facebook friends now. I see what she's up to every week. If she's not taking some sort of class, she's attending maybe an art function, something brain stimulating every week. And I think that has to be at least part of why she's staying so razor sharp, even into her mid 80s. Second quick example, I represented the United States in the World Memory Championship. There was a guy there from Malaysia in his late 60s, so decades older than me, and he just destroyed me. This guy kicked my butt really badly. he memorized the entire dictionary, Advanced Learner's Edition, in English and Chinese. Believe it or not, these are the types of guys you get over at the World Memory Championship. It's pretty intense over there.
I can imagine.
And, you know, he did a demonstration for people that from the media that were there filming, and for people in the audience, they would just call out randomly a page number and give a row column combination. Within a few seconds, he could tell you the word there and its definition from memory. He's known as the walking dictionary, Dr. Yip Swee Choi from Malaysia. But the point is that he was in his late 60s, but with a razor sharp memory. He is constantly training his memory quite intensely, though, every week to reach that level. But the point here is you can have a sharp memory really at any age, but you just need to make it a point to get in that brain memory exercise. I recommend usually at least 15 minutes twice, 2 to 3 times a week at a minimum. That's it, 15 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week, but you will be able to keep yourself mentally sharper. You want to stay sharp throughout your career, right? Not just early on in your career.
Sure. Well, yeah, there's the geek in me wants to ask, how about some of these apps for your phone or for your computer, your tablet, that people use to just pure stimulation in terms of their brain? I can think of one, I think it's called Elevate, which mm-hmm. just has simple exercises for you to do. Are you saying that that is a worthwhile endeavor to, as an example, or something like the Sudoku puzzle on a daily basis or crossword, which is my gig? Those are valuable for keeping your brain sharp?
Yes, definitely. So you can definitely do this on your own with just crossword puzzles, Sudoku. Learning languages is one of the best things that you can possibly do, actually, for your cognitive reserve, is what they call it. So as of today, with all of the current research, there's no doctor, no researcher that can tell you how to prevent yourself from getting dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of dementia. Although no one knows how to prevent it, what the research is showing is that by engaging in rigorous brain exercise, you can perhaps be more resistant, build up what they're calling a cognitive reserve. Basically, think of it as some extra brain muscle. One of the best ways they say to do this is by learning foreign languages. The benefit of apps, like you mentioned, Elevate and similar apps, I believe, in my opinion, is that in theory, if you're paying for that monthly subscription fee, in theory, it's going to give you that push that you need to get you to log in and get the mental exercise in on a weekly basis. But of course, you could do it on your own. And one of the things I highly recommend to people is to try and learn maybe a foreign language that you're interested in. And as you develop the skills that I teach people, memory skills, learning languages will be much easier for you.
Well, you said that you had some skills that you were ready, willing, and able to teach, some techniques that that our listeners might be able to walk away from this program in hand and start to apply right away. Our four steps for remembering people's names, I think, is worth the price of admission. But beyond that, tell us a little bit about what these techniques are and how you put them into an exercise that one might benefit from.
Yeah, I would definitely love to do that. We'll give it a go here now. So we've covered those three main principles: visualization, using additional senses, using your creativity and imagination to make it all crazy and unusual. We're going to try to apply that now to memorizing the following random list of words. Neil, you'll be the guinea pig, and people Uh-oh. Listening to this interview can also try to follow along and see how well they do with the exercise. I'm going to give you a word list. It's going to be monkey, iron, rope, kite, house, paper, shoe, worm, envelope, pencil, river, rock, tree, cheese, and dollar. That's the list of words. Now, when I have live audiences and I can see people's faces, I usually see people looking at me at this point like that I'm crazy. There's no way that they're going to be able to remember that. Not unless I give them a lot of time to do it. And if people were to attempt it, how they would normally approach it is write that list of words out over and over again, recite the list themselves over and over again, rote memorization, basically. But that is not an effective or efficient approach. A better way to do it, I will guide you through a visualization, a visual here, and you will know all of those words forwards and backwards within just about 3 minutes, and even weeks. I have people emailing me many months later to they want to demonstrate they still know the list. They can't believe it. So just relax, have fun with it. Here we go. The first word was monkey. So I want for you, Neil, just visualize a monkey, okay? Just visualize a monkey. That monkey is making monkey noises, whatever a monkey would sound like. Whatever a monkey would sound like in your mind. So you're seeing, you're hearing the monkey. The monkey now picks up a gigantic iron, like you would iron your clothes with. That was the second word. So just see this monkey dancing around with a giant iron. The iron starts to fall, but a rope attaches itself to the iron. Maybe you feel the rope. Maybe it feels sort of rough. Really interact with that rope, okay? You look up the rope. You see that the other end of the rope is attached to a kite. It's flying around in the air. Maybe you reach up and try and touch it, but it's just out of your reach, that kite, okay? The kite now crashes into the side of a house. Just really see it smash into the house. Picture that in your mind as best you can. See that house. The house is completely covered in paper. For some weird reason, paper is the worst. The next word that I had given you, to see that paper all over the house. A shoe appears out of nowhere. It starts to walk all over the paper. Maybe it's messing it up as it's walking on it. See the shoe. The shoe smells pretty badly, so you decide to investigate and see why. You look inside of the shoe, and you find a little worm crawling around inside of that shoe. Really see that smelly worm. Next word I had given was worm. The worm jumps out of the shoe and into an envelope. Maybe it's going to mail itself or something, I don't know, but envelope was the next word. A pencil appears out of thin air, and it starts to write all over the envelope. Maybe it's addressing it, that pencil. The pencil now jumps into a river, and there's a huge splash like you wouldn't expect when it hits the river. The river, you notice, is crashing up against a giant rock. Picture that. The rock flies out of the river. It crashes into a tree. Really see it smash into the tree. This tree is growing cheese. You probably haven't seen a tree like that. This one's growing cheese. And out of each piece of cheese comes a dollar. A dollar comes out of the cheese. The last word was dollar, all right? Now, some people might already be able to recite all those words back, but I'm going to run through this again one more time in about 30 seconds. Your job is to simply replay through this little story that you've created in your mind. So we started off with a monkey. That monkey was dancing around with what? It was an iron. What attached itself to the iron? It was a rope. The other end of the rope was attached to what? It was a kite. That's what you should see in your mind. The kite crashed into something. It crashed into a house. What was that house covered in? You should be seeing paper. Something walked on that paper. It was a shoe. What was crawling around inside of the shoe? It was a worm. The worm jumped into something, and it was an envelope. What wrote on the envelope? It was a pencil. The pencil then jumped into the river. The river was crashing up against the rock. That rock flew into a tree. What was that tree growing? It was growing cheese. And what came out of the cheese? It was a dollar. So now you should be able to recall the entire list of random words pretty easily by simply going through that story in your mind. Each major object that you would see in the story will give you the next word. So Neil, if you can, just give it a try there. Do your best. See if you can recite that back from memory, and your listeners can follow along and see how well they do.
Okay. Monkey, iron, rope, kite, house, paper, shoe, worm, envelope, pencil, river, rock, tree, cheese, dollar bill.
Perfect. Excellent. Really well done there. Under pressure that I just totally sprung that on you, and yet you still got 100%. So excellent job.
Wow.
You didn't miss any. No. I'm sure that your listeners, if they didn't get 100%, I'm sure they got close to 100%. If you wanted to attempt it later, I think that most people could even recite that list of words backwards by simply going through the story in reverse. And again, without any further review today, people will still know that weeks later. And if you just reviewed it even once in your head, did a mental run through of the story, you then would remember it even long-term. So for long-term memory, the best way to get things in a long-term memory is with these types of techniques used in conjunction with spaced repetition. So reviews spaced out over time. When you just cram something in, like 20, 30 reviews in one day, it's only good for short-term memory. But if you review it with spaced repetition, it's going to be very effective for long-term memory.
Attorneys are skeptical by their very nature. And I can hear a whole bunch of them saying, well, that's a great example of being able to remember a series of words that means nothing to nobody. Mm-hmm. I need to remember the name of a case and the principle that the case stood for, the black letter law, as we like to call it. Mm-hmm. So how would you go about trying to translate this technique into something more directly related, say, to the legal world?
Yeah, definitely. So it's just about you know, using your creativity, being a little bit creative about the application, and learning how to take this a step further. So instead of a monkey just being the monkey, the iron just being the iron, you need to learn how to turn those images into mental note cards that represent something a little bit broader. So I was actually, if people take a look at my website, they'll see a testimonial from Harvard University. They actually hired me to give seminars for their graduate student. I worked with Harvard law students, medical students, business mm-hmm. students. So even very complex types of information can be mastered, but it's a matter of learning to make mental note cards. So let's apply this quickly to a presentation. This could be, for attorneys opening, closing arguments, but I usually talk about it in terms of presentations. Sure. If I were to give a presentation on healthcare, always a hot topic for discussion in the US, mm-hmm. my first image of the story might just be of a stethoscope that the doctor uses to check your heartbeat, all right? That stethoscope is just going to remind me of the main topic, healthcare. The first thing I want to hit on in my presentation when I'm talking to the audience is the high cost of healthcare in the United States. Maybe shooting out of the stethoscope are a bunch of $100 bills. Next thing I want to hit on in my presentation is, in order to get certain things covered, sometimes we have to find a way to navigate through or cut through a lot of red tape. Maybe wrapping itself around the $100 bills is a bunch of red tape. So you could see there how you could minimize the amount of notes that you're using when giving a presentation. But this can also be applied to when you're meeting with clients, potential clients, to better demonstrate that you actually know your stuff, that you prepared for the meeting. You can demonstrate five ways as to how you can help them with your services, five things you learned about their situation. If it's a company, if it's a business that you're dealing with, 5-10 key things you learned about their competitors. What happens is when you are able to do this, when meeting with clients, potential clients, you're demonstrating that you actually know your stuff, you did your research, you prepared for the presentation, you're demonstrating your knowledge, your expertise, people have more confidence in you and your ability when you seem to have a razor sharp memory. And I think that the legal profession in particular, if I'm considering hiring an attorney for something important, I definitely, when I meet with them, I want to feel like, wow, this guy or gal, you know, they really know their stuff. You know, that I really can tell that they are an expert in this particular area. And just this simple preparation with these types of memory techniques can really go a long way, make you more impressive and more memorable to people, especially in today's business environment in which the average professional can't remember even a few simple things anymore because we're really outsourcing our memory to electronic devices. So I think the average person's memory ability is going down, but that creates an opportunity for you as a professional to really set yourself apart if you will work on developing your memory skills.
Yeah, well, you are exactly that. You're going to set yourself apart if you show just a modicum of an ability to remember facts and figures and storylines and, you know, key points that you want to get across. Because as you said, the vast majority of us, you know, are outsourcing that. I mean, I think when I was a kid, you probably knew 40 or 50 telephone numbers off the top of your head of your friends and family members. And now I can't even remember my own home number.
You hit on it exactly. I actually give that exact example a lot of times in my presentations because it very well illustrates the use it or lose it principle right. as it applies to memory. My parents, you know, gave me emergency numbers that they felt were important for me to know. We knew those in addition to friends and family members. But you're right. Now one phone number and people are paralyzed. They cannot do it. And it's common for people to not even know their own phone number. It's a really good example of the use it or lose it principle. But again, the opportunity from this is you really stand out, become so much more impressive, memorable in the business world when you do work on developing your memory skills.
Just a quick aside, my daughter still remembers the birth dates of everyone in her kindergarten class from some 25 years ago.
Wow.
You know, just one of those things that she remembers. And I remember taking bets with other people when I would say she can name all 50 states in order as a little kid because she learned it as a song. And just as an example of how incorporating more senses, because it was not just visual, it was auditory, it was rhythm and music, allowed her to remember. And now as a professional actress, the amount of information that she has to memorize and remember in scripts and is just astonishing to most people. But it's a skill you could develop.
Definitely. So yeah, that's really amazing. But she has come up with an approach that's working really well. And again, with the right approach, the right technique, a little bit of training and practice, it really is amazing what you will be able to do with your memory.
Well, Chester, I am sure that we have piqued the interest of a lot of folks out there. Tell them how they can reach out to you if they want to explore this further and talk a little bit about your online memory course and how we might want to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I'd love to. So, you know, today was really just the tip of the iceberg. There are so many techniques that you can learn and apply in various ways to be more successful in your career. I have an entire online memory school. The URL is memoryschool.net. I would visualize a giant, maybe fishing net to remember that it's .net. So memoryschool.net is the URL. You'll learn Korean. You'll learn how to apply the techniques to any language. You'll do sample presentations. This is an exam training material. If you have kids or grandkids in school, it's just really incredibly useful for them. That's just the core training. There's advanced training as well, and there's ongoing training uploaded every month. There's normally a $200 enrollment fee, but I set up code LAW in honor of being on your show. If people use code LAW, it should eliminate that initial $200 enrollment fee. It should set it to zero. The only catch at all is that I did set that code to be valid for only 100 uses. So you just need to be one of the first 100 people to use code LAW at memoryschool.net, and you'll get started without the enrollment fee.
Well, that's a very generous offer, and I'm sure a lot of our folks are going to take advantage of that. Chester, it's been great having you on the program. I wish you a lot of success going forward, and I'm going to go, as soon as we finish this, repeat that string of words just to make sure that it's ingrained properly.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you again for having me, Neil. I look forward to keeping in touch, and I'll hope to see people reaching out for further memory training. Can really make a big difference in your career, personal life, and help any kids or grandkids that you might have in school.
For sure. Well, Chester, thanks ever so much for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and
leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility, and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.